There is a problem of water in the land. The crop is not growing properly. Pollution has increased.
A glacial pace grows alarmingly fast. It's Monday, December 27th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, India beset with numerous challenges. A mission to gaze deep into the past. The business of driving in Asia. Afghan pomegranates. And a novel in a minute. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Aid group Save the Children said it was suspending operations in Myanmar's strife-torn Kaya State after two staff members went missing in an attack that left at least 30 people dead, including women and children, with many bodies burnt. In a statement late Saturday, Save the Children said the two staff were traveling to their home villages for the year-end holidays when they were caught up in the violence in the eastern state. Opposition groups on Saturday blamed the military, which seized power from a civilian government in February, for the carnage on Friday. Reuters could not independently verify Saturday's accounts of the attack from a local resident, media reports, and a local human rights group. State media reported army troops had fired on and killed an unspecified number of terrorists with weapons from armed opposition forces fighting the military government. A villager told Reuters Saturday that he had seen 32 bodies, while Save the Children said at least 38 people were killed. Myanmar has been in turmoil since the military on February 1st overthrew the elected government of Nobel Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi, who has been sentenced to 4 years' detention and faces multiple other criminal charges. Water has long been described as a flashpoint for future conflict. Some areas, though, are for the moment receiving more water at the expense of its supply later. The glaciers in the Himalayas provided water to nearly 25% of the world's population. The glaciers are melting at an alarming rate. VOA Zubir Dar has more in this report, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Six glaciers in the Himalayas have nearly vanished since 1980, according to satellite data mapping. And researchers say hundreds of glaciers in the region are melting, all part of the impact of a warming planet.
Every year you go to a glacier, we are seeing on an average almost a meter of thickness decrease in the glaciers. So that gives you an idea about the state and the stats of the glacier melting in Jammu Kashmir.
In the Himalayan region, over 14,000 small and large alpine glaciers have been identified, including those in India and Pakistan-controlled Kashmir. Some of the region's biggest glaciers can be found in areas between northeastern India and Afghanistan.
We are seeing glaciers melt very fast, and the way they melt is such that we can't estimate how long they will last. We can't guess how much water will flow into our rivers in the next 5 to 20 years, so if this continues, I can see conflicts and disputes in the future between Pakistan and India over water shortages.
Shifts in ice and glacier reserves have already had an impact on agriculture. Farmers in Indian-administered Kashmir are turning paddy fields into apple orchards.
There is a problem of water in the land. The crop is not growing properly. Pollution has increased. There was snow on the mountains. It was slowly melting. The annual paddy crop suffered a loss of 50%.
Local agriculture sustains the bulk of India's and Pakistan's populations, and the two nations have a long history of disagreements over water management. Those disagreements, experts say, will intensify as the glaciers disappear.
If the two countries don't stop fighting, not only will the disputes increase as we can already foresee, but also our two nations' water sustainability will also be impacted. I think we've reached a very interesting point here that not only do the two countries need to stop fighting for ethical and human rights reasons, but also because of environmental reasons.
And South Asia is particularly vulnerable to climate change. Over the next 30 years, if nothing is done, researchers predict water shortages, drought, and rising sea levels could create some 60 million climate refugees in South Asia. For Zubair Dar in Srinagar, Kashmir, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Read and see more by following this and all of our stories on Twitter at VOA Asia. You'll find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. And of course, our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Typhoon misery in Philippines, pandemic dampen Christmas joy. Malaysian floods death toll rises to at least 46. Omicron reported in Japan's Fukuoka. France COVID-19 infections top 100,000. Australia's New South Wales sets daily COVID case record. Three members of K-pop sensation BTS diagnosed with COVID-19. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and so much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter and the voanews.com website. We have more VOA Asia. India confronted serious security and domestic challenges in 2021 as the country's military standoff with China showed no signs of easing, a deadly second wave of the pandemic devastated the country, and the biggest farmers' protest in decades challenged Prime Minister Narendra Modi's authority. Anjana Pasricha tells us more from New Delhi.
The most serious confrontation between India and China in decades ended in February when they withdrew troops from a disputed border stretch in Ladakh. But the India-China frontier remains a dangerous flashpoint as talks to resolve differences at other contested points in the Himalayas have hit a stalemate.
Both sides have reinforced their positions. China has been amassing troops quite significantly. Building semi-permanent structures and making a show of force along that long boundary with India.
India, which had long focused on rival Pakistan, is now preparing to meet the security challenge from its much bigger neighbour. It is building roads and tunnels to move troops and weapons faster along the China border. Prime Minister Narendra Modi participated in two summit meetings this year with the United States, Japan and Australia to firm up a strategic grouping called the Quad, meant to counter China.
That's a challenge that India has woken up in ways that are quite dramatic. But I think that was happening even before the present crisis happened. And now, of course, India is responding in kind. We have seen India not only ratcheting up its troop presence along the border, but also taking some important decisions like formalizing Quad.
Domestic crises also challenged Modi. A deadly second wave of the coronavirus pandemic, fueled by the Delta variant, sickened or killed millions in the summer, just months after Modi had virtually declared victory against the virus. His government floundered to cope.
And you had oxygen shortages, hospitals overwhelmed, and this very tragic sight of bodies awash the river Ganges, which people will take a long time to forget. So given that, yes, he did come in for criticism.
Thousands of farmers who camped on roads around New Delhi to lead a year-long protest against market-friendly reforms won a huge victory when Modi scrapped the laws. It was a rare concession by a leader who has seldom tolerated a challenge to his authority during his seven-year rule.
We are so glad that Modi repealed the laws. We are going home very happy.
The sheen on India's strongest leader in decades has worn off, say analysts, especially as millions of poor people deal with the economic devastation caused by the pandemic.
Apart from, the COVID mishandling, certainly livelihoods, lack of jobs, economic distress. Families pulling out their children from school because there isn't the money. Girls being married early, child marriage on the increase because, parents can't look after them. I think we haven't felt yet, the enormity of what has happened during 2021.
Coping with a more assertive China and addressing economic distress will continue to challenge India. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, soaring into the heavens to see into the past. Happening now in Asia, Mongolian health workers are enduring some of the most remote conditions of any country to get vaccinations to as many people as possible as they head into the pasture land and high mountains with vaccines intended for nomads who account for one-third of the population. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Autonomous driving in Beijing and gridlock in a huge city are the stories on today's VOA Asia business scene with Chris Cascajo.
It looks like a normal car, but the white taxi by the curb has nobody driving it and communicates with customers digitally to obtain directions and take payment. Beijing recently approved its first autonomous taxis for commercial use to the streets of the Chinese capital. The vehicles can only carry two passengers at a time and are confined to the city's southern Yizhuang area. An employee of the taxi firm also sits in the front of the car in case any sudden intervention is needed, but the vehicle drives itself. Developers are hoping Chinese consumers who have embraced e-commerce, online payments, and other digital solutions will quickly get used to the sensation of traveling in a car without a driver. Pony.ai co-founder Peng Jun said the key to moving the industry forward is policy, technology, and public acceptance. Beijing resident Li Jiaming is open to the new idea.
I would like to give it a try. It is a new technology. If we young people don't want to try it, how could new technologies develop?
Passengers using Baidu's Apollo Go cars must download an app called Luobo Kiapo, meaning radish run, and can hail a cab at one of 600 pickup and drop-off points. 67 Baidu taxis are on the roads in Beijing, charging just over 2 yuan for a 5.9-kilometer journey. After decades commuting on New Delhi's parlous roads, office worker Ashok Kumar spends more time than ever stuck in the gridlock that packs the Indian capital's thoroughfares and pollutes the city. The sprawling megacity of 20 million people is regularly ranked the world's most polluted capital, with traffic exhaust the main driver of the toxic smog that permeates the skies, especially in winter. Delhi's patchwork public transport network struggles to cater for a booming population, with long queues snaking outside the city's underground metro stations each evening, and overloaded buses inching their way down clogged arterials. Ashok Kumar.
A person who earns 10,000 to 15,000 rupees salary, how will he afford the metro? They will look for cheaper alternatives.
Private vehicle registrations have tripled in the last 15 years. There are now more than 13 million on the capital's roads, government figures show. The consequences are felt year-round, with Delhi road users spending 1.5 hours more in traffic than other major Asian cities, according to the Boston Consulting Group. But come winter, the daily inconvenience escalates into a full-blown public health crisis. As prevailing winds slow and the thick blanket of haze settles over, the city sees a surge in hospital admissions from residents struggling to breathe. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korean President Moon Jae-in pardoned disgraced former leader Park Geun-hye on Friday. Moon had previously pledged not to pardon Park, but was under pressure from opposition lawmakers who said she was in poor health while in prison. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Thanks for starting off your week with us here on VOA Asia. After years of delays and millions of dollars of astronomical costs, NASA has successfully launched a much-hyped space telescope. Plus, SpaceX has made history again, and a space tourist is already planning his next trip. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
The Space Shuttle Discovery with the Hubble Space Telescope, our window on the universe.
Webb is the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, which launched in April of 1990. The project brings together NASA, European, and Canadian space agencies with the goal of looking at the first galaxies of the universe some 100 million years after the Big Bang.
Webb's mission to understand exoplanets, I think, goes really to some of the core of our humanity, these fundamental questions of, are we alone in the universe? Where do we come from? Where do we go? The universe is so huge. You know, you'd think that out there somewhere there will be life.
The telescope is so large that it has to be folded up to launch. It has a sun shield about the size of a tennis court to keep Webb's instruments a frigid negative 190 degrees Celsius or just 2 degrees above absolute zero. While its technology far surpasses its predecessor, experts say it's too soon to bury Hubble.
First of all, the Hubble telescope is still operating and may operate for another 5 or 10 years, if we're lucky. And secondly, it's a very different kind of telescope. The Hubble telescope is optimized to see the part of the universe that our eyes can see, whereas the James Webb telescope is optimized to see in the infrared part of the spectrum, which gives us a whole different set of information about the universe.
The world's biggest and most powerful telescope should already have launched a decade ago. In that time, its cost nearly doubled to just shy of $10 billion.
Ignition.
In other news, SpaceX launched its 24th commercial resupply mission to the International Space Station. A Falcon 9 rocket carried a Dragon spacecraft that docked with the ISS about 22 and a half hours after launch. Dragon carried cargo, but no crew. And finally, Japanese billionaire businessman Yusaka Maezawa successfully added astronaut to his resume when he and his travel partner returned from a 12-day leisure trip to the ISS. The 46-year-old Maezawa paid north of $80 million for the journey, and he's currently looking for 8 people to join him for a lunar voyage in 2023. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Read and see more on this story by visiting us on VOA Asia Facebook. Making headlines in Asia, China's foreign ministry urged Japan not to politicize sports in response to Tokyo's announcement that it will refrain from sending a government delegation to the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing in February, the latest country to announce it intended not to do so. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, farmers in Kandahar's Arghandab district say years of war, drought, and lack of market access have wreaked havoc on their farms and livelihoods. Gaja Pellegrini Batoli reports from Kandahar.
The district of Arghandab is known for its fruits, particularly pomegranates. Known as anar, the pomegranates are primarily exported to Pakistan and India. But it's been difficult to earn a living due to drought, ongoing fighting, border closures, and late shipments. Abdul Sattar and his family have owned this farm for generations.
This was the front line of the war between the former government and the Taliban. Because of this, we were unable to come here and look after our orchard. With the coming of the Taliban, our problems have increased because we can no longer export our produce as the borders with neighboring countries are mostly closed.
Sattar says he hasn't been able to cover his expenses for a third straight year, forcing him to make some difficult decisions.
This orchard used to be 7,400 acres. Now there are only 2,470 acres left. I was forced to sell the land and the wood from the trees to survive. We grow pomegranates, plums, and grapes, which we used to export to India and Pakistan. With the borders closed, we are forced to sell in Logar, which is far and expensive.
And Sattar says if farmers here do find buyers, they are forced to sell at prices below market price.
Before, I used to sell 1 kilogram of pomegranates for 150 Afghani, $1.62. Now, for 7 kilogram, I make only 100 Afghani, $1.08. They are destroying our heritage. We do everything with our own hands. We do not use machines. We hope things will get better one day.
Farmers in Afghanistan are facing disastrous conditions, according to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, and say they have lost almost all their harvests this year. Gaia Pellegrini-Bettoli for VOA News, Kandahar.
For more than four decades, novelist Dan Hurley has been writing 60-second-long stories about New Yorkers he met on the street. But apart from amusing passers-by with his literary talent, Hurley also happens to be an award-winning science writer. Anna Nelson met with Hurley on the streets of the Big Apple. We'll give Anna Rice more than 60 seconds to narrate her story.
Are you ready for your story?
Dan Hurley has been writing for 40 years. In the 1980s, he came up with a genre which he called 60-second novels. One-minute stories of people he met on the streets, first in Chicago and later New York.
So many people just rush by. They're in a rush. Their head is lost in their thoughts. I think it's kind of zen. It's, you know, be here now. Let's do this. Let's play.
Hurley thought the 60-second novel would be a short-lived experiment, but a little fun grew into a calling.
In April of 1983, I took my typewriter onto the street on Michigan Avenue, and as I'm doing this, I'm thinking, this is a big mistake. I was starting to feel very embarrassed and nervous. So I sit down, I put the little sign, you know, 60-second novel. Sir, would you like a story? Miss, would you like a story? And everybody's ignoring me. And then an older woman came over and said, what are you doing? I will have a story. And I just talked to her for a minute. And I wrote just a few sentences. I pull it out of the typewriter and there's like 20 people around me. And I read it to her. Everybody claps.
Hurley earned about $50 that day. And that's when it dawned on him that his innocent idea for a fun afternoon could be a lot more than just that. A New York native, he flew to the Big Apple for a weekend. And that first weekend in the city brought him about $500. The decision to leave his job and move to New York City was easy, and Hurley never looked back.
You know, sometimes I think I'm crazy. I mean, I've done it now for 38 years. I wear a yellow sport coat and a yellow bow tie and a yellow hat. They're like, he must be some kind of performer. Wow, what is this?
His craft may seem easy to an onlooker. Hurley talks to a person for a minute, trying to learn the most important things about him or her, and then he starts typing, fast. He doesn't write for an audience, just for this particular person. He says no one else does anything like it.
Some people are lonely. I definitely get people who I feel like I'm the first person they've had a real conversation with in years. Folks tell me about divorce, mental illness. I'm like totally open to them. I'm not judging them. People can tell me the weirdest things. I'm not judging them. I am there to write their story.
After 4 years of writing on the streets, Hurley became famous. And with fame came business offers and opportunities. He was invited to large parties and events. He started to get paid a lot. He bought a house. But instead of feeling happy, Hurley says he felt he was turning into a puppet. He missed talking to passers-by. He missed meeting new people.
When I did it on the street, it's my world. I've invented it. I think people just like this idea that there's someone there listening and waiting.
Because Hurley believes every person is a story worth telling. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Casquejo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.